Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello, that was a good start.
Ooh, it's a lovely start, isn't it? Should we do a take
stuck
two?
In my throat then. Yeah.
Probably will leave this bit in if I'm honest. So,
yeah, I don't know what happened there. Hello, welcome to Friends with Friends. I'm Pete Allison. Here's Dave Crim.
Are you a well friend today, Pete? You sound.
Do you know what? I was actually just eating like a chocolate cornflake cake thing, which I don't think I've had since I was about 6 years old.
No.
I was eating one of those, and I think a bit of cornflake was stuck. So,
did you make them? Like, you don't buy those in the shops, right? You just make them?
No, no. My boyfriend's been at a... it's going to sound like we're about 5 years old. He's spent today at a petting zoo with a friend and her child, right, and brought me back a cornflake cake from the farm shop.
Oh, lovely.
So, yeah, that's what I've been up to before recording today.
No, that's fine. It's good to have a bit of insight, to be honest, and good to know what's making you cough. Yeah. Good to know the cornflake cakes are still doing the rounds, you know?
Completely. Yeah, still going.
Can't remember the last time I would have had one. Should we meet today's friend, Pete?
Yes, the sooner we move on from me, the better.
Pete, it's a first today. I'm pretty sure it's a first. I haven't checked, but I'm 90% sure it's a first. We have the author and campaigner, Natasha Devon, MBE on the podcast. I think this must be our first MBE.
God.
Natasha Devon, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
We're just really excited. It's like starstruck. MBEs.
Yeah. Oh,
not
really?
Yeah.
You know, some people say she got the MBE, and I always think that makes it sound like an STI.
Yeah.
It's not a desirable thing. No, it's fine. It's just a badge from the Queen. It's not.
But you met the Queen.
No, I met met Prince William actually when I got mine.
Oh, if it's not the Queen, he's the best. Yeah, exactly. It's the best one.
I'd say even if it is the Queen, probably better.
Yeah, she's a bit boring, don't she?
Yeah, she's just an old lady, isn't she? Now, but you got Wills. Was that where did you go to? Kensington Palace.
Yeah, you go to the palace, and a ludicrous, be knickerbockered man comes out. You're kind of kept in a paddock, and this guy comes out, and he takes you through all the various protocols that you have to go through. You're not allowed, apparently, to break eye contact with a royal, like a horse. You have to maintain eye contact, and you're not allowed to turn your back on them. So there's all this kind of, you have to walk backwards away from them and curtsy, and when you're dismissed. But then when it's Prince William giving you your MBE. Yeah. In my experience, yeah. he completely disregards all of that. He's very normal.
Yeah, this is why I was sort of thinking it'd be better. Wills and Harry, you feel like you could just have a bit of a chat, and it's kind of like interacting with other humans.
Exactly.
Not just like a royal. I love the idea that the eye contact thing with the royal isn't out of respect. It's literally because they will misbehave if you do it like a horse.
They'll kick off, yeah. Yeah.
Like rear up and kick you in the face. Yeah.
Did you stick to the rules, or did you think that you did something wrong and then felt, you know, very uncomfortable afterwards?
It kind of all passed in a bit of a blur, to be honest, but I did talk to Prince William for a very long time, longer than other people, to the extent that it got a little bit uncomfortable. But
for you or for him?
For the audience. I don't think for either of us, but obviously there's hundreds of people there because people come to see their friends and loved ones get their honour.
Yeah.
And I was he was very interested in mental health,
right,
which is what I do.
Yeah.
So we ended up talking about that for about 5 minutes while everyone just looked at their watches.
I mean, it's not very often you have an opportunity to have a conversation with Prince William while you receive an MBE. So I say, everyone else can wait. You milk your moment. Go for it.
Oh, Absolutely.
Nice, thank you.
How did you go about choosing your episode of Friends for today, please?
Well, this episode was probably about the fourth or fifth that sprung to mind,
yeah,
because it has an iconic moment in it.
Sure.
Absolutely.
But I also think there's a lot of motifs that run through Friends which are represented in this particular episode. So I think it's an opportunity to talk more broadly about what Friends teaches us about life.
Ooh, good. Oh, we're going deep this week, Pete.
When I heard which episode you're going to be doing, I said to Dave, I was surprised no one had picked it so far, because it is the moment in it that it gets the title from. That's one of the sort of most famous scenes in all of Friends. So I was surprised that, because we've done quite a few of these podcasts now, Dave. I was surprised no one had picked it.
Do you know, I think the series that it's from has an undeserved bad reputation. I think a lot of people I've heard say that Friends lost its touch during, it's from series six.
Yeah.
And a lot of people say Friends lost its touch. I disagree. I think it is one of those series that's got all those iconic moments that you associate with Friends in it. So I'm here to redeem series six.
Great. Fighting the cause of series six.
Yeah.
You say it was like the fourth or fifth one that springs to mind. Mm. We have this obviously more and more as the podcast goes on. People's favourites have been taken. What are the ones that you would have chosen that you couldn't?
The one with, where no one's ready.
The best.
Yeah. Obviously.
Of course.
Yeah.
Standard.
The one with the lesbian wedding.
Great.
The one where everyone finds out.
Yeah.
The one with Pivot.
Yeah. Yes. That, we only did Pivot fairly recently, actually, didn't we, Pete? It was only a few episodes ago. But the others were all very much like the first few weeks of the podcast. Yeah. And everybody tried to bagsy the one when no one's ready, to the point where we just had to be like, right, Alex Zane can have it. We're done. We can't be fighting these political corners anymore. So please tell us the episode you've chosen.
I have chosen the one with the routine.
The one with the routine.
Very good.
Season
very
six, good. Episode 10. Here's the Wikipedia-provided synopsis, in case you haven't watched it recently. Janine, I'll talk about her in a minute, is invited to appear in the studio audience for the taping of Dick Clark's New Year's Rockin' Eve and invites Joey, Ross and Monica to come with her. While there, Joey tries to ensure he gets a kiss at midnight, while Monica and Ross try to ensure they get on camera, leading them to pull off an old dance routine. Meanwhile, Phoebe, Chandler and Rachel look for Monica's Christmas presents so they can buy her something suitable in return. I've got a couple of issues with the plot synopsis in the first place. A, I don't think they're looking so they can buy something suitable in return.
Yeah, I was going to say, that doesn't seem to be their reason at all. They're just being nosy, aren't they?
That's their moral justification to Chandler, isn't it?
Yeah.
But they really are just being nosy and want to find them and beat Monica. And secondly, I would take issue at Janine is invited to appear in the studio audience. I mean, she's a professional dancer, and she's very much booked to be a professional dancer. But we'll come on to that, because, again, there's some issues with Janine's dancing, guys. Where would you like to start? I think there's two parallel storylines in this one, rather than three as normal. You know, there's the one split. But yeah, should we start with presents or Dick Clark?
Let's start with presents.
Yeah, let's open up.
Let's build up to a crescendo.
Exactly. Gently on the presents. Right, so this is it. Rachel and Phoebe, we are led to believe, do this every year.
Yes.
They're looking for the presents. I mean, yeah, what is it? It's just to get the best of Monica, really, and be nosy, isn't it?
Yeah, they can't work out where she has hidden them.
Yeah.
Rachel, who has lived in this apartment for years, has somehow not noticed that there's a hollow bench.
That payoff is incredible, isn't it?
The fact that she sat there when there was a misunderstanding over the lists, didn't she, at that moment where she first broke up with Ross for the first time, when they'd been together for about 3 seconds.
Yes,
sat in the window, didn't she?
Yeah,
you would think at such an important pivotal moment in her life, she might have noticed what she was sitting on, but apparently not.
And just logistically, I feel like I live in what can only be described as a much smaller apartment than they live in. And I know every nook of storage space in that apartment, because you need places to put stuff. Do you know what I mean? I've got stuff in every hollowed out bit of furniture I can find.
But can we talk about Monica's apartment in this episode? Because it is, with the best will in the world, it's a big place for New York, but it's a two-bedroom, you know, with a shared living kitchen area.
Yeah.
I counted 4 Christmas trees. that's Festivus Maximus.
Yeah. Well, we only really see the main room. Was that stalled in that main room?
And there's one just behind the corner that you can see Monica's bedroom's doors
into
open.
The door, yes, that's right. Yeah, because I was going to say the actual Christmas tree itself is far too big and like exuberant in its first place, isn't it?
Huge.
There's a Christmas tree in her bedroom.
Yes, her bedroom door's open and it's just sort of tucked behind the door.
I mean, that in itself is, I mean, I've never known anyone have a Christmas tree in their bedroom.
No, you're doing well if you remember to get the main one in, you know, more than a week before Christmas, aren't you? Never mind furnishing every room of your apartment with it. I mean, this is one of actually the moments where I do have sympathy for Monica's sort of, you know, obsessive personality traits, because they make a joke out of it in this cold open, but Monica's decorating one half of the tree and the other guys are doing the other half.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's supposedly the idea is, oh, Monica, isn't she fussy, hiding? But their half of the tree shit. It's absolute dog shit. Like, it's like it's like your mate that went to the petting zoo today, Pete, decorated the whole thing, isn't it?
It's like a fairy was sick on it.
It's like they've never seen Christmas before. It's like, no wonder, you know, if I was Monica, I would feel very justified in banning them from decorating that tree forever.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you.
I am familiar with the competitive element of tree decorating, though, because me and my sister and I, when we were younger, there would often be arguments based on, like, you can't put that there, that's in the wrong place. So much like a Ross and Monica sort of argument, we were very competitive over the decorating of our tree.
But did it look like that at the end, bearing in mind you were probably under 10 when you were doing yours?
The bit that I decorated did, Dave. The bit that she didn't. Shambles. Absolute shambles.
So they rope Chandler in very easily. He's immediately like, hey, we can't do that. And then they're like, well, what if she got something better for you? So Chandler's in. Did you notice what Chandler does when he first joins the search party?
No.
So there's the moment where Chandler, he's gone, no, we can't. And they go, what if you got this? And then Chandler says something like, you know, if I help, we can find them faster or something.
Mm.
And then they all go off as if to, like, scurry around and look for the presents. Chandler picks up a fork and a spoon off the kitchen table and just, off the coffee table, sorry, as if to, like, just look under the fork and the spoon. Like, that is lazy acting by anyone's standards.
But what I want to know is, what is Chandler hiding behind his gym bag in his closet?
I also noted this because, like, my natural assumption was porn, but he's in other episodes, he's quite sort of liberal about his enjoyment of porn and not awkward and embarrassed about it. So what's more embarrassing than porn?
Right. Well, the thing is their reaction to it is really curious. So if you haven't seen this recently, Chandler discovers that they do this every year. They've been through his closet and they go, oh, you haven't been to the back of my closet under my gym bag? And they're like, yeah. And then they giggle like schoolgirls.
Yeah.
As if they found, you know, there's a sort of strange reaction to it where it's not, yeah, I know what you mean, Pete. It doesn't feel like it's just something a bit dirty or...
And unless we forget, there has been a conversation about Chandler borrowing an inflatable sheep from Rachel in the past and nobody had that reaction.
That
so it's got to be something really out there.
Yeah, that's what I mean. I can't quite work out what it is. That's different to sort of like hidden porn, which I just don't think he'd be that embarrassed about at all.
No.
And like you say, the inflatable sheep. What could I genuinely kept me awake last night thinking what it could possibly be.
I think it's probably, therefore, some sort of niche fetish item.
Right. Mm.
Is it not? Because I think we can rule out conventional porn if there is such a thing. But yeah, you're right. I'd completely forgotten about the inflatable sheep reference. That is one of Friends' weirdest moments. And it gives an insight into quite what Chandler might get up to.
Yeah, I just don't see Chandler as a very fetishy guy, though. You know,
no.
If anyone was going to have a fetish, it'd be Phoebe, right?
Exactly. The rest of them are all fairly vanilla. I would have, you know, the most we get is Ross's Princess Leia fantasy.
Yeah,
you know, and then there's the handcuffs episode, which is what, Monica's grandma.
Oh God,
in the end, so I would say probably Monica's grandma, second kinkiest of them all. I genuinely can't work it out. Have no idea. They eventually find what they think are Monica's presents.
Yeah.
A stack of presents. And Chandler comes back in and Phoebe's like, oh, don't worry, we found them. And they're all crap. And they turn out to be Chandler's presents. But to be fair, I don't know where I fall on this. Where do you fall on this? Firstly, how does Rachel not know what bookends are? She's pushing 30 and she is baffled. She goes, what is this weird AZ thing? And it's like, if you don't own any, fine. If you don't know what they are, that's worrying.
The peculiar thing about Phoebe as a character is that on the one side, she's very open-minded. She bases herself on being this kind of kooky person. Mm. but she's also super judgmental. And so I imagine being friends with her is like being given a hug and a slap simultaneously.
Right.
So the idea that it didn't even occur to her that they might be Chandler's presents. Also, why are Monica and Chandler getting separate presents when they're a couple?
Weird.
Yeah, a bit weird.
True.
But
point.
It didn't even occur to her that he might have been part of the decision-making process and then has declared them all to be crap without thinking that it might hurt his feelings.
Right.
I'm like, why are they friends with her?
Yeah, no, exactly. You never know when something like that is revealed. You don't know whether Phoebe's going to support you, like you say, because she is open. Minded or just strike you down. She has that relationship with Ross quite a lot as well, doesn't
she?
Where
she does.
Sometimes she's really supportive and interested of his sort of, you know, what is perceived to be his geeky tendencies, but then sometimes she just like slaps him right down. It's like, you're an idiot. You're the worst.
And deliberately sets out to traumatize him by denying evolution.
Yeah.
She's so mean.
She really messes with his hair, doesn't she? And then basically this bit is a, you know, this is basically the side plot to the routine, to the Dick Clark and all that sort of stuff. But this bit kind of plays out. There's the nice moment where they get the chick and the duck in.
Yes.
Yeah. I love Chandler's reaction of, oh, hey, guys, like a human has walked in. It's great.
Yeah. Them treating those birds as humans is one of the nicest friend's traits. I really like Chandler's line where Phoebe says, oh, they're good at searching for stuff. I wonder if they could help us find them. And he says, only if the presents are hidden south for the winter,
yeah.
Which is a lovely line. But then basically, they find them, yeah, like you say, they find them in this bench that's been hollowed out.
Mm.
And then there's the whole rigmarole at the end where Monica does come back.
There's a brilliant moment of physical comedy when Monica walks in through the door and all three of them simultaneously jump and try and hide their presents.
And by try and hide, you mean literally just
throw them on the floor.
Yeah.
But they must have calculated that to the second,
right.
You know, to get it that
sharp.
Yeah, that
timing is so good, wasn't it? When they did throw them, though, I mean, all three of them pretty much just slam them to the ground and they are clearly empty boxes.
Yeah, that's true.
In fact, they are so blatantly empty that when Chandler is holding one, it basically fucking echoes when he taps it.
Yeah. So this is after Chandler's basically persuaded Rachel and Phoebe not to go ahead with this. Mm. Oh, we want to see the look on each other's face when we open our presents, blah, blah, you know, the sort of sentimental moment.
Question.
Yeah.
Who is Linus?
Who is Linus?
You know, Rachel says, Chandler gives this big spiel about how it would ruin the sentiment of Christmas.
Yes.
And she says, whatever, Linus.
Yeah.
Yes,
who is
that's
Linus?
A good point.
Who is Linus?
Whatever Linus, I'm opening even, mine, yeah.
I did not even clock that. Is that what she says? Whatever Linus?
Yeah.
Right, how do we think
I'm
we spell
Googling
Linus?
The first result is a Canadian YouTuber, so I think Rachel might have been quite ahead of her time if that's what she was referencing.
Wow.
Okay, here we go. Linus is a cartoon character from Peanuts, the old Peanuts.
Oh, yes.
Cartoons. First appearance,
oh, it's
September
the boy.
19th, 1952. The benevolent blanket-clutching philosopher always has a kind word for everybody, even his older bossy sister. So he's the voice of reason.
I see.
It is an outdated reference, even in 1999, isn't it, to be referencing something from 1952. But they do. I mean, When things happen like Linus, you go, is that an American thing we just don't know?
Yeah.
Or is it just an old thing? And I think in this case, both.
There's a lot of moments like that in Friends where it's funny anyway because of how they say it, but you
right.
have no idea what they're talking about.
I mean, that one, not specifically for me, but that could easily have been a line that I, as a kid, would have said to other people without really understanding what it means. I mean, whatever, Linus. And they're like, what's he talking about? Because you do just pick up those things, don't you?
Doing this podcast has highlighted quite how many of those references did go over my head, and yet I just sort of willingly accepted them because they were said in a funny way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely right. There's another one, actually, there's a phrase that I referenced from this episode, which we'll come on to later, which is one of my sort of most regularly quoted Friends bits, I would have thought. But then Monica comes back in and sort of gets, she says, oh no, you know, I can't believe you found them. Do you have any idea how long it took me to find that water purifier?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that?
I mean, she hasn't been with Chandler for that long at this point. They should still be in a vaguely romantic phase of their relationship.
And if not romantic, like exciting and interesting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like in terms of, you buy someone something sentimental and romantic first phase. If not, just something he'll really fucking love. Do you know what I mean?
But we've never heard Chandler express a desire for clean water or bemoan the fact that there isn't enough clean water. This is not an interest he's had.
No. And also, is it that hard to find a water purifier? It was my other reaction to that. I thought, like, how hard was it? Just go to the shop if you know you want to buy a water purifier. Very odd, isn't it? Maybe this is, because this is 1999, so maybe this is in the days before sort of the Brita filter was a big fad. I don't know. I can never quite place. Do you know how like cultural things become the norm?
Sure.
So maybe a water purifier was a big deal. I can't say water purifier very easily. That's what I've discovered. Bit of a tongue twister, guys.
You say it better than Monica.
Yeah,
water purifier.
Water purifier.
Can we talk about Rachel's terrible hair extensions?
We can, yes, and I will hold my hands up and say I A, hadn't noticed them, and B, probably wouldn't notice them.
But I thought Rachel's hair was sort of consistently flawless. I thought that was the biggest takeaway thing from Friends.
At the beginning, when she has that iconic Rachel haircut that everybody copied, that was great. At the end, when she has that super sleek, what we now come to understand as Jennifer Aniston hair, that was also great. But then in the middle, she goes through this really dodgy hair phase where she has extensions that don't even match the colour of her hair, lighter blonde, ridiculously thick, poking out of the bottom.
Oh, now you say it, I can sort of, in my head, picture the weird shading, you know, like as the hair goes down, it sort of like changes.
What was that? And I also remember reading in some woman's glossy magazine that there was a kind of hair war going on between Courtney Cox and Jennifer Aniston at that time, and that Courtney Cox always felt a bit resentful because a lot of the films that she was in whilst recording Friends required her to have short hair.
Right.
And she wanted to have long, thick, lustrous locks to compete with. I mean, it's probably bollocks.
I mean,
she has pretty terrible hair in Scream, doesn't she, Courtney Cox?
Yeah, dreadful. Mm. Yeah. So, but she was getting cast in those sort of roles. You're right. They weren't the sort of...
An Ace Ventura.
Yeah. It wasn't the sort of traditional, you know, what you'd perceive to be the long flowing locks. Yeah. So Rachel's... So we're not happy with Rachel's hair in season six. Is that the general vibe?
Yeah. I mean, the one where it looks worst, I think, is the one with the trifle. If you go back and watch that, terrible.
Is it?
Out of character hair.
I'm going to really notice that now. And previously...
I'm sorry.
It wasn't on my radar. No, do you know what? That's fine. That's what this podcast is all about. We get tweets almost every day now from people just going, I can't watch Friends anymore without sort of pausing every 4 minutes and going, that was a weird line. Or did you notice that thing? Or, you know, I think we're gently ruining this sitcom for a lot of people. So it's nice that someone's bringing it elements to us that can ruin it for us. Right, let's get to... Dick Clark's rocking New Year's Eve. Now, I have a quick point of order before we start. This is 1999 into 2000, right?
It is.
Very much referenced Y2K's reference.
Yes, yeah.
Lovely contemporary reference there, like Linus. I discovered, and this sort of goes some way to showing the sort of depth that we do research this podcast, Dick Clark's rocking New Year's Eve wasn't on at the Millennium.
When did it stop?
They took a year off just for the Millennium.
Oh.
All the years have a year off.
I know. Well, they did a thing called, it says it was on ABC every year, and they did a thing called ABC 2000 Today.
Mm.
So they did a big Millennium different program, guys. Dick Clark did still do the countdown, but just as a point of reference, I mean, they must have been livid because they'll have filmed this 6 months before.
It's very interesting because I assumed that Dick Clark's rocking New Year's Eve was a fictional thing.
No. Absolutely 100% real.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. It's you know, the ball dropping in Times Square is sort of an image that I have in my head, but I don't really, you know, obviously, I'm just getting up Dick Clark's New Year's Eve rocking. It's not a good name, is it?
No.
It's very...
I think we might be saying it wrong.
Not a good name to say. It takes a lot of effort to say it.
Dick Clark's New Year's rocking... Oh, guys, I'll tell you what. So... Not only is that, that's a mouthful already, I think we can all agree. But obviously, I say obviously, I'm clicking through, but I think Dick Clark's probably dead.
Oh.
Yeah, died in 2012. So now, on ABC and New Year's, is Dick Clark's New Year's Rocking Eve with Ryan Seacrest. That's what they've called it.
Just call it Ryan Seacrest Rocking Eve?
Can you imagine being the agent in that scenario and not getting your own client's name into the show? Guys, the show's famously got the presenter's name in it. Can we just call it Ryan Seacrest's? What we're thinking is Dick Clark's show with Ryan Seacrest. That is astonishing, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah, so a real thing, and it's still going. They're advertising this year's already. It feels like it's... I mean, our American listeners, I'm sure, will... tweet us to tell us that we're idiots for literally never having heard about this, but
and I'm fine with that.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I bet they don't know about the bloody Hootenanny, do they?
and their brains are poorer for it.
Yes. If you are listening from the stateside and you would like to look at the sort of thing that we do on New Year's Eve, just Google Jules Holland's Hootenanny. Is that what it's called? New Year's Hootenanny or something? It's fucking mad, but there you go. That's what we ring the new year into instead of Dick Clark's Ryan Seacrest show.
Is it just him with various different people performing and then...
Later with Jules Holland, but then they do all the old Lang Syne's and all that sort of stuff.
Which is fine. It's the parts that I find slightly uncomfortable in Hootenanny are the bits where he goes into the audience and virtually sits on someone's lap and goes, and it's clearly not filmed on New Year's Eve, and he's like, "It's New Year's Eve. Are you excited?" And they have to sort of fake excitement as they have to do
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
That is the phrase that I use all the time. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I got invited to Jules Holland's Hootenanny once, and I couldn't go. And I was livid, but it was on something like November the 12th. It was like comically early, and I thought, I'm just not sure I'm ready to fake, because your traditional New Year's Eve things are the fact that it is actually late, so you'd basically be sort of sober at 6 p.m.
wow,
in early November. I just don't think it's amazing to get any sort of party vibe on that show, isn't it? So Janine gets booked to be a dancer on this show. So this is obviously a huge TV show, right?
Yeah. Can we talk about Janine as a dancer?
Can we talk about Janine as a character and then as a dancer? Because the other thing you text me, Pete, isn't it, when I said this is Natasha's episode, is you said, I can't believe no one's chosen that, but Janine.
Yeah. I mean, like, one of the worst visiting characters ever. Yeah.
To be fair to Elle Macpherson, she isn't given much to work with Janine. She is just sort of inherently unlikable.
Yeah.
And boring.
She is quite a dull, unlikable character. Absolutely right.
Well, there was a real opportunity, I think, to teach Joey something. So the reason I picked this episode is because I think this is something that runs through Friends. And I've got four examples here, but there's probably more. Ross and Rachel, Monica and Pete.
Right.
Joey and Kate, the actress.
Yeah.
And Joey and Janine.
Okay.
Are all examples of a woman very clearly saying, no, I'm not attracted to you. I don't like you in that way. And then the man just wearing her down. Right. And I just think, no wonder millennials are confused about consent.
Correct.
Because what did that teach us about when a woman says no? And, you know, with Janine, it was an opportunity for Joey to understand that he's not irresistible to everyone. But turns out, he is.
I know. And it's so, like you say, it's so frustrating because they flip it on a sixpence in this episode. And the next, so this is the first time they kiss, right? The end of this episode.
It is.
After New Year.
And oh my God, the kiss with the music accompanying it. It is just like...
What's wrong with the music, Pete? What's wrong with the sort of mellow rock version of the old Lang Syne as you have your first romantic kiss? It is
if you haven't
as shit, isn't it? That
if
kiss?
You haven't watched this episode for a while where Joey and Janine kiss at the end of it, it is accompanied by this really sort of droning, whiny American male voice singing a sort of guitar-led version of Auld Lang Syne. And the music is like, it's so disproportionate for the almost entirely meaningless moment that it's accompanying. Like, it's the sort of music that would go with a real sort of defining moment in Friends, like a Ross and Rachel first kiss or something.
Yes.
And yet, it's just Janine, who even we know was not remotely asked about Joey until this moment, when all of a sudden she can't wait to kiss him and have this moment when they even count down to it. It's just,
also, music aside, I've written in my notes, unsexiest kiss ever.
Yeah, it's really
the fact that I know that she holds hands with him the first time to replicate that moment at Dick Clark's Rockin' New Year's Eve. But
with Ryan Seacrest. With
Ryan Seacrest. But she then does it again. So this weird kind of hand-holdy, like, five-year-olds would do in a playground.
Right.
And then when they actually kiss, it looks like it hurts Elle Macpherson's jaw. Like, he really, like, bites a chunk out of her face.
It's also the Joey countdown. And then one of possibly the naffest line that Joey ever utters of, "Oh, I just felt like I needed a moment to get ready before kissing her." And then they have this really cheesy laugh with each other. It's like, it's awful.
It's there's no chemistry.
No.
Not a, like, sizzle of chemistry anywhere, is there? It's so, you can't imagine what's going to happen after that kiss. Like, you can't imagine them ripping each other's clothes off and going for it. Do you know what I mean?
I would say this kiss, this particular moment, of every episode that we've watched for this podcast, Dave, I think it's the worst moment in any episode.
All of Friends.
Is that too bold a claim? is it doesn't feel like it fits Friends. It doesn't feel like it fits Joey. It doesn't feel necessary. The way that it is produced and written, the writing is awful. The music with it is just generally all awful.
It's watching it back is interesting because you can clearly see they've reshot a lot of the like close-ups on Joe. Like it looks like it's been pieced together out of a director sort of going, "Ah, like Matt, can you look a bit more like
enthusiastic
about this? Like Elle, can you like faint? Do you know what I mean? It looks like they did a kiss and they went, "God, this is awful. We need to really build it out of like block by block sort of romantic kissing tropes." You know, it's very odd.
I wondered what inspired the creators of Friends to cast Elle Macpherson as a dancer, because I'm not saying there are no tall dancers,
right?
But as a tall person myself,
yeah,
tall people generally do look quite silly when they dance,
yeah,
and that's why most dancers have a low center of gravity.
Yes.
Makes them look much more elegant.
Exactly.
Elle Macpherson A, cannot dance.
Which is evidenced in the only bit we ever get to see her dance. So
yeah,
the problem with this storyline for me is that it shows her dancing. Like, do you know what I mean? Every other episode that she's in, she's off to dance. She's off to rehearsal. She's off to do a show. And your brain can sort of cope with, maybe she's brilliant. And then you just see her do, it's just like a weird shimmy with her hands
yeah,
and her hips, isn't it?
And then this sort of bump and grind, which is not in time to the music. It's... She's clearly not hearing the rhythm of the music,
yeah,
and just she just doesn't look like a dancer. It just takes this massive suspension of disbelief, because already your brain is going, "That's Elle Macpherson."
Yes.
But when other celebrities have taken part in the show, you like Bruce Willis,
yeah,
for example, it very quickly lost that and went,
"Yeah, fine, very quickly yeah, with him, yeah."
Yeah, but no, with Elle Macpherson, I never bought into this idea that she's a dancer.
No, and they make two catastrophic errors. One is showing her dancing, and the other one is showing her dancing in a context where there are loads of other clearly professional dancers as well.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? There's like the girl that starts dancing with, they're all actual dancers.
Although,
that they've surrounded her with. I mean, she's not a great dancer in many ways, but
there are some really shoddy dancers there generally. Like the girl who is on the podium,
yeah,
who's not wearing any underwear. What's that she's doing?
Right. So here's my, I've got a sort of, you have to sort of zoom out on this whole event. So, this is a big show. Janine's been booked as a professional dancer, right, to be one of the dancers. But yet somehow she's allowed to take three sort of friends
randoms
that have no dancing qualifications along with her. So I presume everybody else. So it's a weird room full of professional dancers that they've obviously hired to make look, you know, well, not in Janine's case, but to make it look good. But everyone's just brought mates. What's going on? It's a really weird setup for a party, isn't it? For like a TV party.
And it does, it looks staged and lackluster.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's odd. The whole setup is odd.
The whole setup's really odd. Can we talk about the floor manager?
Oh, he's a dick.
Oh, there we go. We've got a debate immediately. The case for the floor manager, the case against the floor manager. Who'd like to go first? You like him, Natasha.
Well, I mean, I probably wouldn't like him if he was a real person.
Sure.
But I think as,
you
a,
like
as a character.
Him as a character. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I'm with
yeah,
you
he adds a lot to the episode, I think.
He wields a lot of power. Really making a lot of calls. And like some strange calls. Like, so he breaks up Janine and Joey for... I cannot put my finger on why that would make any difference to the show where Ross and Monica are dancing. Do you know what I mean? Like, why do those two not look right together, but the clearly unprofessional dancers that are siblings?
Mm.
That's a good look.
You didn't need the whole tall guy segue.
Really weird.
It's out of place.
Yeah.
Also, why doesn't he just dry his trousers under the hand dryer?
10 minutes
the
under
toilet?
The hand dryer, and he'd be fine.
Would someone really get kicked out of a studio for having wet trousers?
Do you notice how he gets kicked out as well? Did you see this going back? The floor manager literally put his hand on his chest and like bulldozed him out of the shot, like he was arresting him. Do you know what I mean?
For the crime of having wet pants.
Wet trousers, yeah.
Also, tall really guy. Strange. I had this memory association with tall guy, seeing him again. I can remember being at Universal Studios on the Back to the Future ride, and in the video that's part of that ride, I can remember thinking, that's the tall guy from Friends. So I think that actor, for some reason in my brain, it's telling me that I noticed once that tall guy from Friends is in the video of the Back to the Future ride at Universal Studios.
That is quite something. He's called Lex Medlin. I've just been looking him up as you said.
Great
that.
Name.
Lex Medlin doesn't have a clickable through name on Wikipedia, so that's never a good start. But yeah, I mean, that just shows, because that is a small part, isn't it? That is a real small part, but it just shows the power of friends.
Oh my God, have you seen him these days?
I lie, he is on Wikipedia.
He is very unrecognisable as a tall guy. Look. Yeah.
Is he short now?
Oh, he looks very different, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He is.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'd say, I think it's fair to say he's
looks like a Republican presidential candidate.
He really does, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Or like a sort of weird Doctor Who villain where he's a politician but with an alien inside him. That sort of look.
His Wikipedia page, it says that he is noted for his droll facial expressions and anything for a laugh physicality.
Didn't show most of those in Friends, did he?
No. He was also once in a TV advert for a Twix.
There you go.
Wow.
Lex Medlin, everybody. But I just want to go back to that. So, sorry, we sort of got sidetracked from that whole... Joey grinding down Janine thing. I think it's such a good point because I can't remember how many episodes she's in, but this is the first time they kiss, and the very next episode is where they break up.
Is it? Is it that soon?
You know, the episode where Janine can't get on with Monica and Chandler, and then they break up and she leaves. So it's not even like they needed to extend her storyline out or anything. They could have just happily not had Janine get with Joey, like you say.
She could have found Monica and Chandler annoying as Joey's friend and roommate.
And then he kicks her out as the roommate. Yeah, absolutely. It didn't need any of that sort of stuff. And you're right, watching back, you just think, what a terrible message to be like, just keep going, just crack on, lads. The thing we've said on this podcast a lot of the time about Ross and Rachel is just keep going. Like, the amount of times we've had a conversation about something, I'd say, clinically insane that Ross has done. Do you know what I mean? And then you go, but, you know, in the end, it all works. And that sort of consistent pursuing of the girl is very strange, isn't it? Yeah, you're right. What were the other ones you said? Pete and Monica.
And Monica and Joey and Kate, the actress.
Oh, yeah.
No one can resist Joey.
Yeah, it's so true, isn't it?
He's a terrible role model.
He's a terrible role model. And I would say not much of a catch. Good-looking boy, but, you know.
Yeah, unemployed most of the time.
Yeah.
Not the brightest.
Very much not the brightest. What are you really getting out of Joey, you know? Once his looks fade, he ends up like Lex Medlin.
Hello, I'm Jack Beaumont. I do Crime Club. In Series 1, I spoke to people like this.
Did you not kick a policeman in the head?
Yeah, that was... When was that? I was 17. Wait, was I 17 or 19? I think it might have been 19, actually.
In Series 2, I talked to people like this.
There was a paedophile with one leg. I kicked him clean out his wheelchair. About four of us... we battered him.
And this.
Cheated on your boyfriend to give him gonorrhea? Do you want to go there, or would you rather not?
Yeah, no, I could talk about it.
I have jingles like this. Crime Club, That's Crime Club, where strange people tell stories involving bad behaviour. New episodes out every Monday.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So So that's sort of the Joey and Janine thing. We've covered the kiss. We've covered the terrible sort of element of that. Ross and Monica in the routine. So it's part of the same storyline. It's the same bit. We're still in Dick Clark's rocking New Year's Eve party pre-record or whatever it is. And they've come along because they are obsessed with the show that they've been watching since they were kids. And they just want to be on TV, don't they?
I love it when Ross and Monica have these moments where they're really childlike, like when they wrestle or when Ross is spending a lot of time at the apartment because when he's first dating Rachel and he won't get out of the bathroom and she's like, get out, you doofus! I love it. It's brilliant the way that they do that. And Monica is my favourite character.
Okay.
For a multitude of reasons.
Okay.
Firstly, because she's so hot and she's never looked hotter than in this episode.
No, she doesn't look good.
Everyone talks about Jennifer Aniston. Obviously, all three of the female characters in this are supremely good looking.
Yeah.
But I feel like Monica gets overlooked. And for me, like, she's...
The one. She's the one.
And in this episode, particularly hot. But also because I just relate to her so much. If I had no self-awareness, I would be Monica.
Yes.
Like in his vows at our wedding, my husband actually referenced that I always make him decant his snacks into ramekins. Like, I won't allow anybody to eat out of the packet in my house.
That is an incredibly Monica trait, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even have to ask where you stand on coasters, I imagine.
Oh, how hard is it to use a coaster?
Pete, Natasha just physically recoiled when I brought up coasters like she'd been sort of bulldozed back by the floor manager at that party.
And I also think, because I know that you've discussed Ross a lot on this podcast, and I think, and this is just my theory, and you can tell me if I'm right, where the tension is arising is that Ross, the character, is a hideous person.
Right.
Generally. Yeah. He does a few sweet things, but generally speaking. But David Schwimmer is an incredible actor.
Brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, and you see, I mean, so I'm, this is a name drop, but it's relevant. I'm friends with Pasha Kovalev.
Okay.
And I just had lunch with him before I came here. And he'd never seen the routine from Friends. So I said, oh, can I get your opinion?
Professional.
As a professional, you know, formerly in the cast of Strictly.
Oh my God, to review the routine.
On the routine.
That's amazing.
And you know what he said? He said that he could tell from the way that David Schwimmer was extending his limbs that he'd had professional dance training. That he's such a good actor that he makes himself look bad for the character. That's the level of brilliance
that's incredible.
That we're dealing with.
That is a great insight to the routine. One that I've never thought we'd get. A proper Strictly Professionals insight into the routine. Yeah, that's so interesting, isn't it? Yeah, and you're absolutely right. That is where the tension arises. Ross is hideous. David Schwimmer is brilliant.
Exactly.
And that goes back to, I think when we started this podcast and I hadn't watched it for David Schwimmer, Ross was one of my least favourite characters because I, watching it growing up, just went, Ross is awful, he's irritating, he's annoying. But watching it back now, I just, every episode pretty much, I go, oh my God, David Schwimmer's so good.
There is a moment in Friends, because obviously like most people in Britain, I have seen every episode of Friends about 20 times because it's always on. And I assumed it was always on in America as well. But in fact, I have a friend who lives in New York and she came over to live in the UK for a year. And one of her first comments was, you guys really love Friends here, don't you?
Really?
Yeah, she said apparently it's not as big a part of the culture. I mean, it is obviously in the, you know, the fan community.
Of course, and there'll be certain ages that watched it and whatever, but
everyone's aware of Friends here. Yeah. And it's kind of always, it's the background, isn't it, to everything.
Literally everything. I'm consistently amazed how many, like, young people are watching it as well. There's, like, 14-year-olds like now, you know, little sisters of people that I know or people's daughters and sons are all discovering it again. I'm like, this is going to carry on forever.
Forever.
Yeah.
But there is a moment that it doesn't matter how many times I watch the episode or how ready for it I am, it always makes me proper belly laugh. And it's the moment when Ross is convinced that Emily and Susan are going to have an affair. And he flounces into the apartment and starts going off on this big monologue about how he's sure that he's going to lose his girlfriend. And he's really quite distressed. And then Phoebe, who is trying to work out what to name the third triplet, is just staring at him and goes, yeah, definitely I don't like the name Ross. And then he says, what a weird way to kick me when I'm down. It's just brilliant.
It's one. I literally used that line earlier today to my girlfriend, but I can't remember what the context was. But yeah, it's such a brilliant moment, isn't it? And it's such a, the way all those storylines build in together. We did this one episode fairly recently, I think. And to that point where Phoebe can say that complete out of context thing and his reaction is just so brilliantly done. That is like absolute peak friends. But yeah, so Ross and Monica, like you said, they're being childlike, and you get this real insight into like their childhood, don't you?
Yeah.
From watching all this and what it must have been like in the Geller household. I'd imagine being friends with them would have been awful.
Yes.
At school. Just really awful. But they're desperate to get on this platform. I'm not sure they go particularly the right way about it, because the moment when they're dancing in front of the floor manager guy's face, bit too much, I'd say.
Yeah, and it's clearly not the way to go with him.
No.
You can immediately tell he's the sort of character that if you try too hard, he's going to deliberately ignore you. Yeah,
you so need not to make him feel like it was his choice.
Absolutely.
One of those
not great at reading people.
No, absolutely not. But they're just so excited. And so, yeah, so it all sort of builds up, and it pulls up. They end up pulling out this routine.
Yeah.
And it's so, like with Pivot, it's such a quick bit, but it's such an iconic moment that you sort of forget about everything. But
it's the facial expressions as well. There's some like close-up shots of their sort of overly posed faces while they're dancing. It is, I'd say, a top five friends moment.
Yeah, but the time from them first mentioning the routine to the end of it is, you know, it's less than 2 minutes, the whole bit.
It's just at one verse and a chorus that it lasts for.
Yeah.
But what I think is brilliant is that it's pretty much impossible for Monica to not look good.
Yes.
So even though she's trying to make it comical, actually she's pulling it off. Ross doing that routine is hilarious. It's the funniest thing ever. And you're right, it's the intensity with which they're doing it. And you just go, I don't know how they got through that without corpsing. Like, how many takes?
How many takes do you think they did that? I mean, how long will it take them to learn that routine as well? I'm fascinated in that sort of the whole, you know, I imagine they're filming an episode a week of Friends at this stage. A lot of David Schwimmer and Courtney Cox's time must have gone into learning and rehearsing that routine.
I wonder if it was choreographed or whether they came up with it themselves.
Just themselves in the bit, like a secret handshake that they'd almost done. These guys are just always doing this on set, so we better put it into an episode. So they do the routine in front of everyone and the floor manager's watching. And then, yeah, this bit sort of peters off slightly because they go to him and sort of go, hey, I guess we don't have to ask who's a bit like. They're supremely confident by this point.
Yeah.
I don't have to guess who's going on the platform next. And he says, yeah, get up there. And then the payoff, the punchline is that he goes to the cameraman, make sure you get that, because Dick will want it for the bloopers reel.
Right.
But they never get to do it
for the bloopers reel, no.
The whole party stopped, and there's only 10 more seconds of the party, which is the countdown, which finishes after one when he shouts cut.
For all of his, sort of slightly fascist way of floor managing, he's not particularly organised, is he?
He's not on it, is he?
No.
No, he's not on it. And because I kind of, weirdly, I was like, it feels like a bit of a weak punchline to be like, get it for the bloopers reel, you know, like it just feels like a bit like, oh yeah, okay. But weirdly, wouldn't it have been better if the whole point was he was like, guys, absolutely, you get up on the platform, you'll be the next people on there when the music starts again, knowing full well the music's never going to start again.
Yeah, you're right.
If they'd have managed to, you know, that feels like he would have played that better. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, you're spot on.
Sorry, guys.
Why they didn't consult you, I don't know.
Well, this is what I was saying. I was only 13 years old. I could have happily done a bit of consulting.
The song that the routine is performed to, Dave, we were talking about this over text last night.
So it's one of the quiz questions, Pete, so let's dance around it slightly.
You know? Okay, sorry, wait, let me check the phrasing of the question. One moment, please. One moment. That's fine. I have found the artist who is responsible for that song. I won't say her name or anything, but how many Twitter followers do you think she has?
Oh my! Well, so this is interesting, isn't it?
Wait, George, should I read you her bio as well on Twitter?
I feel like maybe in the interests of discussing this, Pete, we should have another first on this podcast and bring a quiz question up.
Okay.
Wow.
I think we should ask it now because I think
I'm not sure I'm ready.
We're going to be dancing around.
Okay,
so the question is,
This
was question five of the quiz. What song is playing as Ross and Monica perform the routine at the party?
Boys Ain't Nothing But Trouble.
Trouble with Boys. Yeah, do you know who it's by?
XOXO Loretta.
You found her on Twitter as well. That's her Twitter name.
That is incredible. Is that her name on Twitter?
Loretta is her pop
star. That's
her
artist name.
And then Twitter name. Her Twitter is XOXO Loretta. But I.
Oh my goodness, because I couldn't. I texted Pete earlier saying, who is Loretta? Can you find anything about her anywhere?
I found her.
Go on.
So her Twitter bio is. Lithuanian-born child prodigy, singer, songwriter, pianist, animal lover, and then she says also that she fights against human trafficking and animal cruelty. Good for her. Noble work, Loretta. And she's, I feel like career probably peaked with Friends because she's got 500 followers, but I'm just scrolling back through.
I thought you were going to say, it's like, is it the Rembrandts who do the...
The song,
yeah, yeah, I thought, because what else have they done?
No, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, and yet they seem to have forged an entire career.
Yeah.
I mean, I appreciate that Loretta only gets 20 seconds as opposed to the theme tune every week.
Every week for 10 years.
On Instagram, on Instagram, she has 25,000 followers.
Nice.
Yes, I've just found her on Instagram. Loretta Franken...
Frankenite. She posts a lot of photos of dogs.
She does. This is her Instagram, Natasha.
Oh, don't scroll down. Some of the photos are quite distressing of animal cruelty. Stick to the ones at the top.
Okay. That's a bit of a turn, isn't it?
It is.
But yeah, I mean, it's such an iconic moment. And that song is, I mean, has anyone ever heard that song in any other context?
Well, a bit of bonus information. That song isn't even from an album. It's from an EP.
Is it?
Yeah. So I get the impression she just made it as a hobby on the side of her animal rights activism and
got it into Friends.
And Friends were just feeling a bit cheap and didn't want to pay for the rights for something a bit more well-known.
Yeah, because by the time you're into season 6 of Friends, it doesn't matter what you put on. People are going to, you know, if you go to the Trouble With Boys YouTube, every single comment has some sort of reference to Friends in it.
Of course.
You know what I mean? Like, it's 100% people that have seen this on Friends. And I just don't know, I'm not sure how many original XOXO Loretta fans there are. But yeah, I mean, yeah, that's probably right. It's probably just cheap rights, wasn't it? But yeah, on an EP only. Great. Great little trivia.
So this has nothing to do with the routine.
Okay.
I want to talk about a frustration that I have. I was trying, because I wasn't sure what you were going to ask in the quiz.
Okay.
And I am Monica. So... I'm not saying that I definitely will get 5 out of 5,
sure.
But if I don't get a respectable score, then I will be very unhappy.
Okay.
And so I was trying desperately to think of the things that you might ask me. And I thought, oh, I wonder what it says in the very initial scene where Janine comes in and introduces the concept of what's going to happen in the episode. Joey is sitting on the chair that is at a right angle to the sofa, and there's the blackboard behind him.
Oh, wow.
And I thought they might ask what's written on the blackboard.
Okay.
So I tried to freeze it. But of course, on Netflix, what happens when you press pause is that you get this writing that appears above. So you can't
so
actually
frustrating, isn't it?
See clearly what's... But as far as I can work out, it's nonsense. It's words that don't belong together.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it must mean something.
It's like a code.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. I wonder if we can get that up. That's excellent. So you couldn't decipher actually what it was.
I saw they wrote something like white stuff, which I'm assuming is not on the menu at no. Central Perk.
Let's hope not. I wonder if we can try and get that up. If you are listening and you can find us a screenshot of that, I was trying to get back into Netflix, but that feels like a long way around of doing it. So it's just completely nonsensical words.
It's gobbledygook.
Together.
Yeah.
I bet there is a hidden code in that.
Yeah.
And if there is, do you know what we'll do on this podcast, Pete? We'll bloody find it.
Yeah.
Someone will know. Okay. Well, you'll be pleased to know that doesn't feature in the quiz.
Phew.
It's a mixed bag this week.
Okay.
Some easier than others. Should we start with question one?
Mm hmm.
What story was Ross telling the friends in the coffee shop?
The story of the dreidel.
The story of the dreidel. And that's just another magical David Schwimmer moment where it's a proper, like, classic sitcom moment, isn't it? Right? It cuts to them after the music and goes, and that's the story of the dreidel. And everyone's looking so tediously bored, but just a really nice
Ross
moment.
I quite want to hear the story of the dreidel.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did start reading up on the dreidel thinking, I was like, this is a waste of my day, but, you know, we're all going to do it. We're all going to do it now. One out of one.
Question two, what was Ross's excuse for trying to kiss Rachel in high school?
Because he needed chapstick.
Correct. Yeah, again, weird moment that when you really sort of deconstruct, Ross just sort of went for Rachel in high school. We were always sort of led to believe, I think, that Ross really fancied Rachel from afar, but never really made anything of it or tried anything.
Yeah, it's very loose relationship with what constitutes consent.
Yes,
again.
Again, exactly that. I think we're all, you know, best skirting over
if
Ross's.
If this needs saying, don't just randomly kiss girls because you need chapstick.
Yeah, yeah. There are better ways of getting chapstick. Question three. What does Janine call Dick Clark's New Year's show? Now, this is tricky because it depends really.
Is it Dickin' Rockin' Dickie E?
Yeah, that is to the letter. Dick and Rocky, yes. Dickin' E.
It's the only funny Janine moment.
Yes, of the whole episode slash episodes. Yeah. And I also imagine if you know what she was trying to refer to, which we don't as Brits. So we're just like, she's just saying words now. This could be it. To be fair, the real title of the show is not much worse than that.
It's really not. It's really not.
Question four. Well, this is your final question, given you've already had question five.
Oh, yes, it is.
So for question the full four. Set.
Yeah. What? I can't feel my elbows.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
What award were Ross and Monica given for their routine?
Honourable mention in the brother-sister dance category.
5 out of 5.
Exactly right.
Yes! Go home happy.
That is a full house and an impressive one. I really thought Dick and Rockin' Dickie Eve would trip you up. But no, absolutely well done.
Very
absolutely
good.
Thrilled.
Can I have a troll doll nailed to a 2x4, please?
It is one of our ambitions on this show to one day do. We're gonna do some sort of live podcast at some point that involves an element of competition, and we're gonna make up a Gala Cup. And we've been plotting this for, I'd say, for over a year now, haven't we, Pete? In secret, and it just there's a lot of effort that goes into that, but we will do it one day. We absolutely will. Natasha, thank you so much for coming on Friends with Friends.
Thank you for having me.
We hope you've had a lovely time.
I have.
You also have your own podcast.
I do.
Fact or Bull.
Yes.
With Keon West.
Yes.
Tell us all about that.
Keon is a social psychologist at Goldsmiths University. So every week we take a statement, for example, gender is a social construct.
Yeah.
And we invite an expert into the studio to debate whether that statement is fact or bull.
Okay, good. Nice. I mean, very similar to Friends of Friends in many ways. You know, we cover a lot of the same issues, a lot of
very
the same severity,
intellectual.
I'd say. Yeah, very intellectual, high sort of levels of qualification here. But yeah, okay, great. Go and check that out, please do, if you are listening to this, Natasha's podcast. It's Dr. Keon West, isn't it?
I've
MBE'd you and not doctored him, which is very disrespectful of me. So.
But he's not here, so.
No, exactly. Yes, yeah, screw him. Thank you very much. And Pete, we shall see you next week.
See you next week.
That didn't make any sense, did it? I said, Pete, we shall see you next week. And I'm just a me. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, hello. Here we are, still here. Next week, comedy writer Jack Bernhardt, who has chosen. Jack, which episode, please?
The one where Ross finds out.
Season 2, episode 7. Yes, question mark. Confirmed.
Confirmed.
Go away, watch it, do your homework. We'll talk about it next week and have a very excellent chat about interstitial stings and chronology.
Oh. Now there's an incentive to come back.
Can't wait, I hear you cry. See you next week.
Bye.
GreatBigOwl.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.